Somebody recently, yesterday, sort of figured out what I mean when I keep saying the music is a clue, but not really. The music is a clue. That's all. I'm going to keep saying it. All right. So never mind about that. Today is a very special day in a lot of different ways, including the fact we have a great nose panel. I mean, we pretty much usually have a great nose panel, but Sam Hatch, co-hosts the Culture Dogs on Sunday nights on WWUH at 8 p.m. It is really one of the very few times during the week that we allow you to turn your dial or whatever it is you used away from WNPR, and you can listen to WWUH without guilt because the Culture Dogs are that good. Rich Holland is a principal and design director at CoLab and a commissioner on cultural affairs for the city of Hartford. Carolyn Payne almost needs no introduction on the news anymore, but she's an actress, comedian, dancer, founder, director, and choreographer of Kinetic Dance, and that's just scratching the surface. So a little bit later in the show, we have been watching Cobra Kai, which is YouTube Red. YouTube Red is sort of a new concept within the YouTube universe, but it's an original series which extends the story of the original Karate Kid movies. It's not a reboot. I think it's an extension. And we'll also be talking about a topic that none of the panelists wants to discuss. We should almost have that every week built in as a feature, you know, that one of the topics would be a topic that none of the panelists
want to
discuss.
I thought it was.
Well, no, everything on the show is that for you. Every time. But there often are – well, anyway, the royal wedding, which none of the panelists want to discuss, but that's too bad. But we're going to begin with the other thing, the other couple. I mean, you know, Harry and Meghan may be the big couple of the week, but you could argue that the other big couple was Yanni and Laurel, although – or Yanni. I mean, you say Yanni. Yanni and Laurel, yeah. So you probably know about this by now. But on the off chance that you don't have internet or something, you only listen to the radio, there probably are people like that. So even so, I mean, it's been covered by the New York Times and All Things Considered and everything. It's one of those things that gets circulated around on the internet where people have two absolutely unchangeable but completely contradictory reactions to, and it's a sound file, and the person is saying a two-syllable word. And at that point, there's sort of a fork in the road beyond it's a two-syllable word, and some people hear one thing and some people hear another thing. What we're going to do for you right now, and we're just going to kind of talk over it a little bit, is the New York Times has now done this thing where they've got a little file with a slider on it where they can adjust the frequency so that you're at the lower frequency, you're more likely to hear Laurel. At the higher frequency, you're more likely to hear Yanni. But so why don't we just play that? And meanwhile, I will poll the panel here on what they heard in the first place. You know, you're either a Laurel or you're a Yanni, just the same way you were either gold and white or blue and black. So here we go. Start playing it. Okay, so what do you hear? What do you hear, Rich?
I am straight up Team Laurel.
Okay. And Sam Hatch?
I am I can go both ways. I began as a Yannyite, but now that I know how Laurel sounds because of that sliding scale, I can hear Laurel.
You can hear the Laurel, but you were Yanni. You're initially
I started
you went,
as a Yanni.
You went Yanni. All right. Laurel. So tiebreaker over Laurel. Here.
Yanni.
Yanni. Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Laurel.
So well, actually, I was a Laurel, so I guess we're sort of deadlocked here about this.
Yeah.
So
it doesn't matter for me where on that frequency you are.
Yeah.
It's always Laurel.
That's how I
see. I only can hear Laurel at a certain frequency.
Yeah. Yeah, when he goes,
can you hear Yanni
low, it turns low.
Yeah. People are really turning off their radios at this point.
Actually, that sounded a little like they were saying Yelly.
Or uncanny or something like that. All right, so I guess the question isn't that. It's sort of why do we like these things so much? I mean, maybe you even could sort of – let me start over on this side this time with Carolyn. Like, did you wind up in arguments and conversations and things like that with people?
Yeah. Alex, my roommate, and I definitely had a probably good 30-minute discussion over this. He adamantly heard Laurel and was like, what is wrong with your ears? So, like, what are you – you know, we went back and forth. And then we took to Twitter and Facebook to see what other people were saying. And so I think people like this because it gives you something to talk about other than, like, your own life or problems or discussing who's going to scoop cat litter. Like, at least you can have an argument about something a little bit – a little bit different.
Well, although, I mean, that could just get be folded into everything else. Because if you won't scoop the cat litter, you know, Alex is going to say, well, that's so Yanny. That's like, Just like a Yanny. Figures. Just like a Yanny. Maybe just that's the way you are.
It's a type A, type B personality. Yeah.
Sam, how did this work for you on social media or anywhere else? IRL, as they say.
Unfortunately, it didn't really work out into any major arguments. I had determined that it was a frequency issue pretty early on, and I realized that since I have, despite being in a band and attending many concerts, I've retained a lot of my higher hearing. And I can hear those annoying ringtones that the kids would use sometimes on their phones that supposedly adults can't hear over a certain frequency. So I realize that if you can hear well or you're listening to on headphones that have a good high frequency response, then you're going to hear a Yanny possibly. I understood the science behind it too quickly. No arguments.
Yeah, so you weren't well poised to have irrational conversations about it.
Yeah, exactly.
The entire point of this
I was
phenomenon.
Frustrated to find out that I was the one who was in the wrong and it was Laurel.
Yeah, it is right. Laurel. Though. Yeah. Yeah.
Spoiler. All right, how about you, Rich? Did you find yourself at work?
I argue with people about things like this all the time. And insisting that I'm right, it kind of goes along with the Oxford comma.
Yeah. I love the Oxford comma.
Thank you.
Yeah,
that's a poll right there.
I'm team Oxford comma.
You're team Oxford?
How about one space or two after periods?
One space, and I don't care what the research is saying.
One space.
One space, yeah. Two space was just like trying to add in extra space to like flesh out your paper.
No, it's grow up. One space.
But Jonathan, the best panel ever.
Jonathan, am I two spaces? Because I know that we have – yes, I am two spaces. That's right. And Jonathan has written in capital letters, one bleeping space. Yeah.
You could hear my entire office swearing as they have to run searches to remove two spaces.
Yes.
So my general take on that to try and stay on topic.
What is your general – what is your general
So I didn't actually have any discussions about whether it's Laurel or Yanny. Mm-hmm. I had more discussions of why are we doing this still? Mm-hmm. Which are kind of interesting. And a lot of the arguments thus far have been because we've got nothing better to do.
This is what I'm saying. We need something.
There's that. But I think that for me, the prevailing argument for me was that that the internet has come alive and it's become a thing. It's become a human being that is constantly and desperately looking for its 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And that 15 minutes has been condensed to like 15 seconds so we could get a whole lot more of them in time.
So like the internet is sort of like Donald Trump in the sense that he doesn't like for a day to go by that we don't pay attention to him in some very visceral way. You're saying that the internet itself in a very HAL 2000-like way.
Exactly.
You know, wants us to. I love that theory. I love it a lot. I'll tell you my theory, which is I think that we like these things. It's a subset of some of the stuff that's been said here, but I think it's, for me, a more acute thing. There are increasingly things that we can't talk about. Like, you just can't talk about these things. You don't want to get into it. For example, I have the people who live across the street who I'm very fond of. I like them a lot as neighbors, and our dogs like each other and everything. They happen to be very involved with AIPAC. So the day they told me that, I thought, well, I have to make sure the Middle East never comes up. We will just never talk about that, you know? And so we have things like that, conversations we don't want to get into. These conversations, they're like parking spaces, right? You could even have a pretty strong argument. Like you and Alice could really go at it about the whole question about whether it's Yanny or Laurel, which is not the same as like Hillary Clinton versus Barack Obama or something like that, right? It's a no-stakes argument. I think we like those things.
Yeah, you won't walk away completely angered.
Yeah, it's not going to fill you with rage with that person, hopefully. Mm-hmm. But it gives you something that you can debate and then move on from. Yeah. It's not going to change your view of that person. I mean, hopefully.
I think it's subtle advertising for Yanny, the new age musician, because he's coming on tour.
Yeah, that's right. He's launching something.
I think he's behind it.
There's a name you haven't heard in a while.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That if you screw up the frequency well enough, you end up with Yanny.
You might actually hear one of his famous tunes. As heard on the Acropolis.
The sound of this was about as annoying as a Yanny song.
I
can't hate the Yanny.
One big plot to facilitate the Yanny comeback.
Exactly.
In keeping with your thought, Colin, my dad had this concept, right, that there are two things that you never, ever, ever debate or get into conversations about. It was politics and paint colors. And he proceeded to get into like heated conversations about both topics.
I feel like paint colors might even be spill over onto those dresses, almost literally. Gold and white. Really? Yeah. I mean, like you can get into a heated conversation.
Oh my goodness! In my house, that was intense.
Well, I suppose if it's a room you're going to live in and you're arguing about how, what color you're going to paint it, I can just see there's big stakes here. By the way, Yanni did tweet that he only hears Yanni. Ha, ha, ha. Because that's really funny. You could do better than that. You could, you know, come up with a little. All right. So, yeah. But I love Rich's theory, too, which is that the internet kind of wants us to notice it.
The internet is like an unfulfilled musical theater student. Like.
Essentially, yes.
Right.
Got it.
Wow, that sounds deeply like personal.
I don't hold a musical theater degree. Mine's in theater. Okay.
The other good tweet, and I did see this one earlier, is Marley Matlin, who tweeted, Yanni or Laurel, don't ask me, I can't hear bleep. So I don't know. Is there anything left to say about before we move on to the topic you don't want to talk about? Is there anything else that you need to get off your chest about this particular topic?
No, I just wish now that you read the Mary Martin thing, I wish that she had picked one.
Right. So let me ask you a question, because my answer to this question is no. Do you remember which color dress you saw back in when we were completely divided as a nation? And as an internet universe, over which color dress we saw. Do you remember which one you
saw? I think I saw the white and
gold, white and gold.
Yeah.
I saw the bluish one.
Yeah.
I saw the white one.
You definitely know. But you're sort of a design color. Mm-hmm. You're going to remember something like that.
It was a bad photograph, though.
And can I tell you?
That's what I took away
from
it.
So the first thing that I did, after I made a decision on what it was, I verified.
Yeah.
I pulled it down, brought it into software, color corrected it.
That's like, it was just a rough photograph. It needed adjustments.
But see, that's the problem. Like, you even noted, I think, Rich, that this week, you know, the New York Times and NPR, I mean, they got involved. First of all, they traced it back to its source. Mm-hmm. You know, it's from a dictionary.com thing or something. But we don't want to know that, do we?
No.
I mean, like, we don't want to know stuff like that. The whole point is ambiguity, right? So we can have something to argue about. Yeah. All right. So we're going to move along here. Even if all I can ever get out of you is I don't want to talk about this, but I bet you I can get more out of you. So we're heading into the weekend.
So wait, we have the option of just stonewalling.
This could be the best
news ever. No comment.
Yeah. It wouldn't be the first time. Well, no, I actually sort of think, well, okay.
There's a lot to talk about here.
We have a term on the nose. We have a term on the nose called the Papoulian through line, and that is named after Irene Papoulis, and the idea is you look for something that is – connects some of the topics, because she can always find a way to do this. And Rich is going to have one in the second segment that will connect all three topics. But the one that I think for people in England, the royals are kind of Yanni and Laurel. I mean, they're something that you could talk about all the time, but they don't really matter. They really – like I listen to this podcast every week. It's hosted by a very funny British comedian named Frank Skinner, and he has two of his Confederates there. And they talk all the time about this stuff. They talked for like 40 minutes about the letter that Meghan Markle's brother wrote, basically saying, don't do this, man. Don't do it. No. And they were just having the best time ever. They don't really care. It doesn't really matter. Anyway, so you say you have lots to talk about, Rich, so you get us started.
Well, so – not to surprise anybody here, but I could not care less about the royals, right?
Yeah.
They're the least fascinating thing to me. because, you know, they're going to walk through their paces.
Were you on when we did The Crown? I feel like you were.
Yes, I was absolutely on when I did The Crown. And,
yeah.
You know, and I felt like Carolyn then. Yeah. I was whacking my head on the table. It's like, do I really have to watch this thing about about rich white people? And
I assume you don't think they solved that problem by getting Meghan Markle.
No, I think they did amazingly well.
Yeah.
You know, because now I think we've got like the Clampets meet the Crown is what we've got going on. My favorite part of this whole arc and the part that keeps me interested is not at all the royal wedding and, you know, and the predictability of what all that's going to be and, you know, and how mannered and manicured that's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's what's happening with that wacky Markle family.
Right. The Markles.
You know, it's their, right. For me, and that's my through line. It's their 15 minutes that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And when I take a look at this oaf of Thomas Markle, Meghan's
senior,
okay, the dad who like staged this photo shoot, and you know that's turning into this huge embarrassing controversy,
and is conveniently having heart surgery during the wedding.
Exactly, it's fabulous. But he staged this. It's fascinating that this guy staged this photo shoot, And nobody's happy with him about this, you know. And he staged it with these paparazzi that took images of him in this internet cafe that just looks absolutely awful. And somehow, the system that wants this kind of like glossy egg perfection of what this movie of what this marriage is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Is taking a look at this bumble that this guy's making with the paparazzi, you know, and making him the sort of the demon of this story.
Well, I mean, in a way, this is the universe taking its ultimate revenge because nobody is ever really good enough. If we think back to mm-hmm. Princess Diana, Princess Diana in certain ways was not satisfying to them,
exactly.
was not what they'd hoped for, not what they wanted, was constantly being made to feel as though she were some kind
but
of
Harry,
outlier.
Who yeah. Harry marries and yeah. and Harry doesn't matter anymore as far as a royal, really, right?
He's about sixth in line.
Right. So that's kind of low.
Got a shot,
that's kind of
right?
low down. I mean,
he's like designated survivor.
Right. So, like, I mean, at this point, like, you know, he could be marrying a blow up doll and it just like, wouldn't even matter. Like, he's not.
He would get a real, real doll, not just a regular blow up doll.
I mean, you still get yeah. to be a princess, so.
Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
So that's your feeling, is this is incredibly low stakes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that this is that important. I could care less. I didn't even realize it was this weekend.
No, I didn't either.
Yeah. I had no...
What's wrong with you people?
It was not on my social calendar, unfortunately, or my interest radar.
I get the feeling the culture dogs are not covering this either.
I had my wife, I was doing laundry last night, and I'm like, quick. Give me just like the rudimentary basics
give me your elevator
on this.
Pitch.
And then in the middle of the night, I woke up and rolled over at one point. She's like, "All right, who's getting married? And then who's the groom? And why is it a controversy?" And I'm trying to like remember all these little details. And I still don't. I haven't retained much of it. Yeah.
Well, the New York Times today has a piece, the most tawdry portion of which I sort of broke off and sent to you as a link from The Sun about – but the New York Times has a piece about how this is being merchandised every which way, which is the funny thing. The
yes.
other thing about the royals, which is that there's – you know, on the one hand, have this kind of quasi-sacrosanct air to them that they are, you know, leaders of the state and leaders of the church, although they are leaders of neither, you know, that they are somehow or other this shining example to the world untainted by commerce, except that you know, every time that one of these things happens, it's merchandised to death.
Oh, the commemorative plates yeah. Yeah. And tea towels.
And the sex toys.
Yeah. Oh, yep.
Yeah.
There are Harry and Meghan sex toys.
They didn't look very good, though.
No. No, I was... As sex toys
go,
you mean it.
like what is the market?
Compared to what, I guess.
Yeah. I'm a designer. Yeah. I could tell you these
okay,
things.
But like, what is the market on that? Like,
I don't think
me?
We want to go there.
Hopefully it stays in its package right. at the market.
So let me ask this. Is it interesting that she's an American.
Mm-hmm.
Even back to your point, okay, they're rich white people. Well, she's an American, she's a divorcee, and she's a mixed race person. Like, to me, this is like, you know.
That's the only thing that I find interesting about this, but not interesting enough to care.
What more would she have to be?
Huh?
What more would she have to be? Like in this Symbionese Liberation Army or something like that?
I just don't care about weddings.
Yeah.
You know?
Agreed. Yeah.
Right. It's just like, it's a thing. Though, can I tell you, this morning I saw this beautiful image of her in a white blouse surrounded with this gorgeous smile, surrounded by these Rwandan children.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, wow, that's like so very Princess Di.
Right. Yeah, it is Princess Di. Mm-hmm. I'll say this. This is my Papoulian through line that connects us to the next segment, which is I do think that there's something mildly, seriously significant about this. I'll take the risk of averring that. And that is that, you know, I've been thinking this a lot about this a lot also in connection with politics. Like here in Connecticut, we're having kind of a protracted conversation about politics and race and about representation and diversity on tickets and stuff like that. And I keep saying, you know, to millennials – this is a weird conversation because they're kind of over it, you know? And it's not a question of is there going to be a black person? Are you going to go to one of the cities and find a black person to be on your political ticket? That's, you know, to millennials, black people aren't people who live over there in the city. Mm-hmm. Black people are your college roommate and they're people you marry. They're people that you marry. And I do feel as though, you know, this is – millennialism. This is the not millennialism as a religion, but these are this is the millennial moment for the royal family. They've got a millennial prince, and this is what he does because that's what millennials do. They don't think in the categories that we did. There's a browning of America, and now there's a browning of the royal family. And I say good.
I say good.
That's my serious point.
No.
There's another article worth reading along with, you know, the one on sex toys from New York Times.
And you can just take our word for that one.
Yeah, exactly. You don't need to actually read it. There wasn't much article there. there was just mostly pictures. There's an article in The New Yorker that's entitled, I just noticed in my notes, We Are All Thomas Merkel.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that to me is the underlying truth of what's going on here.
See more about that.
Well, it's that he's entering. We're not the people who are getting married in carriages and with trains that require 50 people to track them.
Yeah.
So many folks are want to align with this fantasy,
mm-hmm.
but really at the end of the day, we're this schmuck trying to figure out what our 15 minutes will amount to,
mm-hmm.
and doing the best with it and fumbling the ball every way.
All right. Well, the news has broken, by the way, that Prince Charles will be walking Meghan down the aisle. And since Thomas is not available to do so, I would say that he is walking Meghan down the aisle and kind of handing the world over to her and her over to the world all in one thing. And I think it's sort of maybe the end of his generation's significance. All right. So we have something much more important to talk about, and that is Cobra Kai. And I have a lot to say about Cobra Kai. So we're going to take a break now. I bet you the whole panel does too, at least compared to what they had to say about the Markles, as Carolyn now calls the royal family. They're not the Windsors anymore. Forget about the Windsors. Almost every night. Well, she's no lady, she's my wife. The preacher asked her, and she said, I do. The preacher asked me, and she said, yes. The preacher said, I pronounce you 99 to life. Son, she's no lady, she's your wife. And I come now. Melt like candle, wax it on and I wax it off on your body. Call me Mr. Miyagi, sex karate. Wax it on and I wax it off. In the way she was my girl, she be in the spot. That's actually a song recently recorded by Austin Marigold, who I happen to be very into these days, in a way that, well, never mind. In an old guy, dad dancing kind of way. And the point is that here's a young guy, young British pop singer, who's using Karate Kid idioms in his music because the Karate Kid is just with us forever. It is embedded in us forever. And now we have a way to go on living with the Karate Kid. It's called Cobra Kai. It's airing right now on something called YouTube Red, although Jonathan is informing me that it's about to change its name to YouTube Premium in the coming weeks. As he says, now that there's a reason in the world for anyone to have ever heard of YouTube Red, they are changing the name of it. But anyway, it is an extension of the story of Karate Kid. Both of the protagonists have grown up. The protagonist being the Ralph Macchio character, Daniel LaRusso, and then Johnny Lawrence, his opponent, who's played by William Rapka. Is that his name?
Billy Zabka.
What's it?
William Zabka.
Zabka, yeah. He's, by the way, just so terrific in this. Anyway, they've grown up now. Daniel is a car dealership magnate. Johnny is a left-behind loser. They run into one another at the car dealership. Because Johnny's car has been run into, so Daniel wants to introduce his former karate opponent around to the staff. Here's a little bit from the series.
Hey, Anoush, come here. Louie, get over here. I want you to meet somebody.
I gotta go.
No. This is Johnny Lawrence. He and I go way back, right, buddy? This guy was the toughest dude in my high school. When I first moved here from Jersey, he and I, we got into it a little bit. This guy really had it in for me.
Yeah, well, you did move in on my girl.
Well, she actually wasn't really your girl anymore, was she? I mean, all right, it's all water under the bridge.
Wait, is this the karate guy? The guy from the tournament?
Oh, this is the guy whose ass she kicked.
Listen, it was a really close match, but if you want to get technical, I kicked his face. I'm just busting your chops.
It was an illegal kick.
Oh, illegal? Really? Come on, what about that elbow to my knee?
Yeah, I got a warning, you got the wind.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. No fighting in the showroom, guys.
Yeah, come on. All right, back to work.
All right, nice meeting you.
Let's go, get back to work. Enough reminiscing, right?
Yeah, enough reminiscing. But there's never enough reminiscing, Sam. And we're in a period right now where generally kind of 80s pop culture is being repurposed every which way, whether it's Fuller House or Twin Peaks or Roseanne Barr. Or, I mean, we could just go on and on and on here. So how does this one do?
One of the things I liked about it the most is that it's very much in the now. William Zabka's character is this man who's trapped in the 80s, and that's looked at as something to be pitied and laughed at. But meanwhile, it's loaded with Game of Thrones references, and as much as it references the Karate Kid, it's also referencing what's going on around us now, and it's very much about the kids of these characters and what they're doing. So I appreciated that, and it's awesome seeing William Zabka doing something of this size. I was a fan of his character himself on How I Met Your Mother. Mm-hmm. He was on the entire last season because there was a joke about Neil Patrick Harris's character misconstruing the Karate Kid as being about William Zabka's character, Johnny. And this that's pretty much this show. It's like now here's his chance.
Right, and to be the hero. I think you and I share the perception. He's amazing in this thing. I mean,
he's great.
These scenes involve a lot of comedy on his part, but comedy by a guy who takes himself and his anger and his resentment and his feeling of being lost very seriously. And somehow or other, he does that. The script asks him to do that, and he does it without sacrificing either quality, I would say.
Yeah, it pushes it like right to the edge of making him this completely foolish character. And I also like about how he is a good person, despite himself.
Maybe.
Yeah. And he offers up some pretty dodgy bits of advice, and sometimes they end up actually paying off for the characters. And he's really fascinating. And I do like that it does have two protagonists, essentially.
Right.
Daniel LaRusso is just as important in this story as Johnny.
Before I get to Carolyn and Rich, I just want to amend one thing that you said, which is I think he offers bits of advice which is never meant constructively, like almost
yes,
never
exactly.
meant constructively, but
then accidentally
has unintended consequences of being constructive.
Like take the babe to the golf spot, right. The fun spot, and then you'll score. And
right.
then they just end up having a good time on a date. Yeah.
But even on that one, though, there was a piece of – they want to paint the guy as a good guy, or
sure,
they want to
yeah.
paint him as he has a boundary – where his, where his not good guy won't cross, right?
Because, mm-hmm. yeah.
because he was insisting with to this young to his young apprentice at this point,
great.
That you don't ever take no for an answer,
yeah.
Like in terms of relationship stuff, you don't ever take no for an answer, and then he was really clear about when a no is a no.
Yes, yeah.
So they're starting to paint in some lines that he won't cross,
right. Yep. And I think there is, Rilke says, perhaps every dangerous and terrible thing is something vulnerable asking for our love.
Mm-hmm.
And there's I'll be the first person to apply Rilke to the Karate Kid or to Cobra Kai, but somebody had to do it. I think there's a little bit of that, too.
Yeah.
I mean, we are being asked to see Johnny that way, even though in many other superficial ways, he's loathsome.
Yes.
he has remained loathsome. Carolyn, before I go to you, let's hear a little bit more of Johnny's particular version of the wisdom of the world. He winds up being Mr. Miyagi to a young Mexican-American boy named Miguel. So let's hear a little bit of back and forth between – and this would be Johnny's version of being Mr. Miyagi.
Hey, I just wanted to say thank you.
Well, you said it.
So last night, was that like Taekwondo or Jiu-Jitsu or MMA or something?
It's karate. Old school karate.
Do you think you could teach me?
What? No.
What? Come on. When school starts, those guys are going to make my life miserable.
That's not my problem.
Look, if I just knew a little bit of what you knew, then I would be
fine. Forget it. I don't do karate anymore, all right? Besides, I need to find a job.
Well, you could open your own karate school.
It's called a dojo.
You could open your own dojo.
Look, I'm not getting into this with you, all right? I'm not even sure I'm allowed to be around kids right now. All right, you want my advice? Stop being so annoying. Maybe you'll stop getting your ass kicked.
So that would be the level of Johnny's helpful advice. Stop being so annoying, and maybe you'll stop getting your ass kicked. So, Carolyn Payne, you kind of went back to the beginning, to the Big Bang, as it were. You weren't really sure that you'd ever seen the original.
Yeah, embarrassingly, I was not 100% sure. I had seen Karate Kid when I did kind of go to try to watch some of it, and this series has like flashbacks. I was like, oh, I vaguely recall some of this. So when this series, first of all, I didn't completely hate watching this, which is a really big deal for me.
That's like 4.5 stars.
That's a poster quote right
yeah.
there.
Yeah. There's your poll quote on this. Feel free to use that.
Neutral is, I'm never being on this radio show again. That means that's like 3 stars.
Right. I started watching this, and at first I was kind of like all snark with it because I was like, oh, look, like this karate kid had his great moments at 15 and now like his big aspiration is to be the best car dealership in Reseda. Like, aim high shows you no matter how great your teen years are, like you're going to end up running a car dealership. And so I was kind of like, oh, this is sort of and then the Johnny character is just a total mess. But I really got invested in it and started to really like the characters, and I thought it was, I think it's well written, and I like how the teens involved. I think they've done really well with the teen drama.
Yeah,
part
it's almost a
angle.
Redo of Heathers as well as Karate Kid.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of layering. You have this like Mean Girls aspect and all of the bullying and the teen relationships, and there's like the family drama with, you know, Karate Kid and his family. And
Daniel LaRusso, you mean?
You mean Daniel LaRusso.
Scott Baio, as I thought he might be.
Right. Well, Sam, you said that earlier, that there's really two protagonists. And, you know, I mean, obviously in Paradise Lost, the devil has all the best lines. And so Johnny does, too. He's the one who's been flung from heaven, and he's living out his existence.
And I think he's spectacular in this.
So he's living out his existence in this strip mall inferno.
Yes.
Meanwhile, Daniel has been allowed to live in heaven, which consists of owning a big, big, big car dealership, face on billboards, TV commercials, in a beautiful house, sexy wife. But there's some way in which that's also, it turns out, just heaven isn't all it's cracked up to be. And so Macchio has to play that. And that's complicated, too.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I took away from this is why haven't I been seeing more Ralph Macchio along these years? And it's interesting seeing him because he's such a fresh-faced young kid in the original Karate Kid. Mm-hmm. That's really interesting seeing him just as an adult. And he's not a plastic surgery disaster, which is also, you know, both of these guys just look like regular old guys. And I appreciated his arc. I know Jonathan was saying he was upset whenever Daniel would intrude in the story. But I thought the balance was nice there. And there was a good amount of supporting characters, all the kids and everything like that, and how all those little pieces are moved around and interconnect. And it still, you know, kept me guessing even at the end as to who's going to be aligned with who. And you're really rooting for both Cobra Kai and Daniel's side as
and
well.
And it's funny. Oh, like, there is something.
I think it's very funny. I think it's
in each episode that made me laugh out loud.
Yeah, and John Hurwitz and Hayden Schlossberg, who did the Harold and Kumar films, which also surprised me because I walked in thinking I was going to hate them, and then they won me over. They worked on this, and I liked that level of comedy where it just gets on the edge, and then it you know, still doesn't, you know, shy away from digging into the drama from time to time, especially with Johnny.
It's time to go to Rich Holland and find out whether he still feels he's got a Papillion through line that'll take from Yanni Loren to the royal wedding, the Markles, excuse me, to this.
It's all still to me about what happens with trying to claim your 15 minutes. And that's what's been carrying from the internet trying to do it to good old Thomas Markle and both of these guys wanting to claim their 15 minutes again. I found personally the Danny
LaRusso
character really irritating. I wish he weren't in this thing. Because I mean, his 15 minutes went on for an awful long time, and he's still needing to go back and rehash something that actually he turned out victorious in anyway. You know, I think that he's like a 15-minute glutton. And
he has his face on a billboard.
Yeah. Right, like, see?
He does TV commercials where he chops the prices up with his hands.
Yeah. Right.
It's just...
Well, here's my Papillion through line, which is, I actually sort of you know, went back and watched most of the first movie too. And I was thinking about the way in which in 1984, this was in its own way a slightly radical statement about multiculturalism, right? This is – we're dead in the middle of the Reagan years. And it's a movie that in some ways has – it's always compared to Rocky. To me, it's more like the movie Breaking Away in the sense that it's about people – about a young man not of means, you know, from kind of the wrong side of the tracks without a lot of resources, embracing somebody else's culture and getting a victory out of this. And so here – when you think about the original Karate Kid, where does wisdom reside? Well, it resides with this guy from Okinawa, and beauty is a bonsai tree. And the blonde American Republican-looking karate guy, he's wrong. He's going to – his philosophy is no mercy, strike first. That is not going to work at all. That's kind of, in 84, a pretty big statement in a way. And particularly – I don't know, Rich, did you read – I don't know why I'm singling you out except that I do know I'm singling you out – the piece in the last week's New Yorker about – is it DeAndra Lawson, the photographer – it's a terrific piece where at one point she talks about the idea of where does wisdom reside, and she talks about
how. I didn't see that.
And she says in the Matrix, you know, it's a black woman smoking a cigarette making cookies. That's the mm-hmm. oracle, right? So where's the wisdom? Well, it's in Mr. Miyagi is where the wisdom is in 84, and so now you have this, you know, this reversal of it. You have, you know, Johnny, who has failed to embrace any of the values, not only of 1984, but of 2018. The world has become much more multicultural, and he is the prototypical Trump voter. And so the politics of this get very interesting to me. I don't know how this comes out. I've only seen six episodes, but I'm intrigued by that. But there's a way in which it kind of links to the Meghan Markle, Prince Harry union in the sense that we're a much more multicultural place right now. You don't even make the argument that wisdom resides someplace else other than in white bread American values. It's already there.
Yeah.
Who was it?
Hollywood has been writing that script for a while now, right?
Yeah.
And I think that Hollywood has a lens based on, has a perspective based on who runs it, right? Mm-hmm. That in the arc of the story, the folks who will lose or who will not like are going to have a sort of political angle. Mm-hmm. That has a tendency to be conservative, that has a tendency to be, you know, pro-militaristic. And the folks who look like us are always going to be the heroes of the story.
So, Sam, yeah. You know, in the original movie, the Cobra Kai is the embodiment of evil. It's like everything that could possibly be wrong is there in the Cobra Kai. But so this movie is asking us also to repurpose the symbolism a little bit. You know, here's a group of kids. Johnny is trying to teach a group of kids who are all the kids that he used to torment.
Yes.
They're overweight. They have facial deformities. They're nerds. They're weak. They're this, they're that. And I don't know. That's an interesting thing, right? This thing that we're supposed to hate with the, you know, no mercy, strike first, Cobra stuff being handed over to people that we're invited to love or at least empathize with.
I also love the bit where he has to sublet his space to the yoga class and they hang up the namaste poster over the strike first. But yeah, I love that whole concept that there is something of use within the original Cobra Kai mantra that, you know, can be used for good. And I love the fact that he doesn't actually want these kids. It's, you know, it's out right. of necessity. It's out of money. And he thinks they're all losers and weirdos and stuff. And I love the scene where he goes to kind of pitch why Cobra Kai should be allowed back into the All-State Karate Championships because after the events of the first film – you know, they're banned for life. And he kind of stands up and gives this bogus speech about how, you know, he's taught these kids self-respect and confidence, and they've also taught him something. And by the end of the speech, he's kind of realized that he's been speaking the truth the entire time. And, yeah, I love that, how it challenges us in our 1984 kind of mentality as viewers. And they're like, ooh, boo, hiss, Cobra Kai, they're the bad guys. And maybe there's something positive to be gained out of that when your sensei isn't a complete psychopath.
Right. And so the yoga class. When the yoga class comes in, he sublet the space. Did you notice what pose they went into right away?
Cobra.
Yeah, they went to Cobra pose, which nice. Is also right. I mean, that was not remarkable.
It was a cute little visual joke. I did like
there are
that.
A lot
I was
of
like,
neat little references and Easter eggs in there.
Right.
Yeah.
But for me, I liked that Johnny, so he was the bully.
Yeah.
But now, like, he's just so pathetic that, you know, he ends up having to be the person who is, like, the hero in training these people who are the victims of bullying. And I think that that's kind of, I mean, there's, like, something to be said for that. But also, at the same, I feel like that is kind of where Hollywood often goes. Mm-hmm. Like, the person who was the bully or the hero, like, the great one in high school often ends up not top of their game.
It's the Back to the Future thing.
Right. I think also there's that, you know, I mean, you know, you were talking about the 15 minutes. There's also, we have to go to a break, I guess. But so Jill Sobule was in here on Wednesday, and we just have these long, unstructured conversations. And she's polling people right now on their first kiss. And so she asked me a question about my first kiss. And then she said, okay, nobody can see this, but you just turned 4 shades of red. Hmm. And it really is true that the ghosts that haunt us from our high school years, I mean, it seems absurd that a karate tournament from the high school years of these guys, you know, would be that important to them now, but also seems completely true and real to everybody about their high school traumas. Anyway, we do have to take a break. We'll come back.
Ordinarily, I'm not one to spread gossip, but TMZ has just reported that Yanni was seen canoodling with the blue and black dress. Today's show was produced by Jonathan McLaurel and me, Kyone Wolf. Amanda Fish, here's Amanda Laurel Yanni Fish. The part of Bill Curry was played by Pat Morita. On Monday, we revisit our salute to prom night, but without the caged tiger in Florida. And now, back to Colin.
Yes, the caged tiger at a Florida prom was one of our proposed topics that didn't make the final cut. But I also want to say before we get into endorsements that Carolyn Payne and I will be co-emceeing on June 9th the Art for AIDS event in Hartford. And so for details, you go on the Connecticut AIDS – what's the organization called, actually?
AIDS-CT.org.
Oh, you're so
good. I had to
be
really careful how I said that.
Yes. All right. So very, very well done. So you go there and you can find out more about it. But Carolyn and I would love to have you show up. And you get a little free piece of art at the end of the night, too.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Okay. So endorsements. We'll start over here with you, Rich.
Oh, okay. Two of them. First is the Commission on Cultural Affairs announced last month that we're taking applications for the first poet laureate for the city of Hartford. So if you know a poet, love a poet that resides in the city of Hartford, go to hartfordpoetlaureate.org and get an application in, send in some samples by June 4th, and you too could have this three-year stint.
Self-suffice. Case closed. He lives in Hartford, right?
You done already with that?
Yeah, self-suffice. Kaim, yeah, he's done.
All right, well, then.
All right.
Self-suffice, apply.
you definitely should apply self-suffice. All right, go ahead. You had another one. That's
one right. Other. Yeah. Compass Youth Collaborative that does tremendous amount of work in the city and schools with kids and run Compass Peace Builders that really do some amazing work with kids in the city who need good, strong support to keep them out of trouble, are putting on an event on Monday at Hog River Brewing Company in Parkville, Hartford. It's called Network for a Cause. It's May 21st, 6 to 8, $30, open bar, and food trucks will be there. Yeah. So show up. It'll be a good time. Nobody's getting talked to about anything. It's just come and hang out. You could go to their Facebook page, Compass Youth Collaborative, and scroll down and you'll find where to register.
All right. Sam Hatch, what have you got?
Quickly, keeping in the spirit of Cobra Kai, I'm going to drop a trifecta of YouTube action. The first being my YouTube channel, youtube.com/culturedog. I've been doing it for about 4 years, and I cover mostly home video and film and retro kind of home video formats. But I've got a ton of stuff on there, so fall down that YouTube hole. And the second thing would be an amazing Karate Kid ripoff that's been rather obscure, hard to find. You could get it on VHS maybe. It's called Showdown from 1993, starring Taibo mastermind Billy Blanks as the Mr. Miyagi, who's a high school janitor in this case. And Christine Taylor is also in there, and it's amazing. It'll change your life. And the final thing to get prepared for Solo next week is – check out the channel of Oral Knots. It's A-U-R-A-L-N-A-U-T-S. They're a great bunch of commercial makers from Brooklyn who decided to quit their jobs and make silly videos, including one amazing Star Wars video where they have taken a bad lip reading type approach by removing dialogue and replacing the entire storyline so that the Jedi are a bunch of addicts and complete self-centered weirdos, and that the Empire is a family fun kind of entertainment center. And yeah, it's amazing stuff.
All right, Carolyn Payne.
I am endorsing a show I discovered on Netflix when I should have been watching Cobra Kai. I instead pissed my week away watching this and said, because that's how I roll. Evil Genius on Netflix is a documentary about the pizza box bomber that happened about like a little over a decade ago in Erie, Pennsylvania. It was an incredibly bizarre case where this guy robbed a bank allegedly against its will. He had a bomb strapped to him. It ended up detonating. Well, it's really fascinating, and it kind of follows. It's this true crime documentary, sort of. Kind of like Making a Murderer. They're sort of trying to get to the bottom of this. And it's like four episodes, and it is not at all a waste of your time if you're into that kind of stuff. It's an interesting watch.
All right. Just a few things that I need to mention for you. First of all, I won't be back here to do the news until June 1st. Leaving the country, actually, on Sunday. And so I'll be back here on June 1st, and we'll be talking about Solo, the new Star Wars series movie, the early years of Han Solo and Lando Calrissian. Carolyn will not appear on that show.
That movie I actually want to see, and, which is why I won't be.
I also, this isn't an endorsement because I haven't read it yet, but we're also on June 29th going to do an unusual nose. We've never done a nose about a book because it just takes too long for the panelists to read it. So we're giving our panelists plenty of time to read a book called The Power by Naomi Alderman. It is kind of a science fiction feminist story about a time in the future where women, as I understand it anyway, they can produce electricity out of their fingers and shock people, and they become more powerful than men. Rebecca Castellani and Rand Cooper and Kate Russian will be on that panel. I'll say one last thing because I'm getting ready to travel. I have this – well, Samuel Johnson – famously said, none but a blockhead ever wrote except for money. And I've always sort of lived – I've been a freelance writer for a lot of my life. So I usually don't write anything unless I'm getting paid. The exception being TripAdvisor restaurant reviews, which I've always felt this need to write. And so I've written a lot of them. But I am actually going to sort of anti-endorse TripAdvisor restaurant reviews. I actually think they're kind of misleading because a lot of people who don't know anything about food and don't know anything about restaurants write them. And then people go to places like Rome and Paris, and they go to these restaurants that, you know, a bunch of people from, you know, small Midwestern towns have said, well, this is really good here. They have really good food and big portions too. And, you know, I mean, so don't use those. And what I'm really going to suggest, a lot of people are getting ready to travel this summer. If you're going someplace new or you don't know the terrain, there are food blogs everywhere. I mean, just, you know, okay, I'm going to Rome. I'll tell you this. So Rome has like tremendous, Elizabeth Mancilla is one person, Katie Parla. I'm reading their food blogs to find out where the good restaurants are, where the good food is, because these are people who really live there as opposed to people who are visiting from Dubuque trying to figure out the restaurant scene. Who are you going to trust? The person who lives in Rome or the person who flew in for 6 days? So don't use TripAdvisor for all kinds of other stuff, you know, to find good tours to go on and stuff like that. But don't use it for restaurant reviews. Those people don't know what they're talking about. And there are just, I mean, any place that you're going there that's of any size, there'll be really good food blogs written by people who write and speak and think in English. So do that. I mean, you know, if you go to Paris, Dory Greenspan, who's from here in Connecticut, I think she still has a really good food blog. So, all right, I'm all done advising you. This is my last show before I go away. I couldn't imagine three people I would rather spend it with. Unless, of course, it would be Johnny Lawrence, of course. No, of course not. No, I wouldn't do that at all. So thanks very much to Carolyn Payne and Sam Hatch and Rich Holland. Thanks to the producers. And enjoy your weekend. And talking about that, and talk about everything as a matter of fact. Oh, yeah. Talk about Torrington, Vernon, Danbury, Waterbury, Oliveberry, Woodbury, hitting on New Britain. Vernon, I already said that one. Avon, Farmington, yeah.